or pop to getting that first autograph from Mike Schmidt or Dr. J, Claude Giroux, or maybe even Cy Young if you've been around long enough, or taking your kids to that first game at Connie Mack Stadium and seeing that incredible, incredible green grass, or going to the vet or the Podesta. But now your kids are probably taking you because you're getting up there like me. It's a feeling you get that brings you back to your own Philly Field of Dreams, and the Museum of Sports Show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Lou Scheinfeld. Doug Scheimel is off today, but zooming in is my Museum of Sports cohort. I never understand cohort. Strange name. Susan Baxter, who just fulfilled a lifelong dream of watching her beloved Denver Broncos in Denver. Welcome back, Susan.
Yes, thank you. It was awesome. And just to be in the same building as my childhood crush, John Elway, was amazing. But I wanted to say happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there today. And thank you for their service.
Absolutely. And I'm glad to see the NFL and all the other leagues that were wearing fatigues and honoring them on the field and in the stands. It was just wonderful to see. By the way, our show is dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that'll capture it all right here in Philadelphia. We're also Zooming live on the Facebooks of the Museum of Sports and of the station, WWDB. So look us up. The Museum of Sports Show is brought to you by Tepachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center, the specialist in non-invasive treatment. And as I always say, if someone's messing with your heart, you should hope it's non-invasive. Today, we're going to be saluting the Spectrum, that grand old arena that housed the Flyers, the 76ers, and thousands of concerts and boxing and wrestling and tennis, roller derby, indoor track.
Circus.
Truck pulls and horse shows, indoor football, too. And we're going to talk about the book that tells all about what went on behind the scenes. It's my book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, about the early days of how we got the Spectrum and the Flyers started and got the 76ers in there and turned it into just a fantastic arena. Coming up a little later is Ed Rubenstein, who spent 14 years working in the bowels of the South Philly Showplace in finance. And we'll find out what it was like working on an abacus back in those dark and early days. Then we're going to hear from our weekly sports memorabilia king of collectibles and our Museum of Sports partner, Nick Tepachi Jr. But up first, we hope, is Rob King, the Philadelphia 76ers Director of Basketball Communications and part of the brilliant front office that's paying tribute to the Spectrum's heritage with classic on-court logos and spectacular new uniforms. Rob, are you with us? Okay, Rob hasn't checked in yet, but you know what?
I think he's on the phone, but I don't know.
It's Chris Heck, president of the Sixers. Yeah,
how are you?
I take my lead from Rob. I don't, you know, but usually has me do the talking.
Yeah, look, we were expecting Rob. I'm happy to have you. You're the man. And listen,
I'm not Rob, but I'll try to do my best.
Well, you're darn good from what I read in the papers and what you're doing. But I just have to tell you,
very kind.
I am so happy, and so many fans are so happy with the way you honor and pay homage to the past. Unlike, let's not talk about the other teams, but you guys do a fantastic job. This latest iteration with the Spectrum logo. I had somebody call me from Atlanta and say, I'm watching this game on TNT. What's with the Spectrum logo? They loved it. And the uniforms are absolute killers. So kudos to
thanks.
You. How did this come about?
You know what? I've been here, this is my ninth season, and we have a group of people that we try to rebuild the brand and rebuild the property of, which is really following the basis of, hey, this is, let's never forget that this is Philly's team, this is the fans' team. And in doing so, it's particularly when you're going through a rebuild on the court, you start thinking about other things that are fond and why this team is special and what the connection is. And it was really the first thing that we thought was, why don't we start honoring the past and highlighting the past and showing everybody in the present what a gift it is to have a team with history. And so that's how it began. And throughout the years, you know, we've done different things from from honoring legends and building statues at the training facility to having our alumni teams from whether it was 83 or 66, 67, these great champion teams come back and be part of the organization. So there's been a lot of fun things that we've done, and it's really I think it's our obligation as stewards of the team. And that's another thing. We never want to believe that we are the 76ers alone. We're just a small piece. And the 76ers are built over decades.
That's beautifully put. And you are stewards. And sometimes and I've worked with the teams in Philadelphia for many years and inside, and sometimes you get a little insular and you think it's your team. Mm-hmm. But the fans are just so important, and they love this. I mean, I just love seeing 20,000 people at every Sixers game. As soon as you opened up the stands after the pandemic eased off a little bit, your fans are just so passionate. I know we're great in Philly and all the teams have great fans, but the Sixers fans, I think they're in a class by themselves.
Yeah, listen, I think we're on a great wave. I think we have, you know, something that maybe teams of the Sixers, I won't speak to other teams in the market, because they have their own successes and challenges as well. But for us, we really wanted to focus on educating a younger generation and reminding an older generation of how great it was. And so there was a real focus on both the past and the future. And even in the present, we could have a good time getting to the future. And so that, you know, the spectrum just hit right in the middle, right in the heart of us honoring, you know, the 76ers as a franchise on the anniversary of the 75 years of the NBA.
Well, you know, there's probably at least a half a dozen sites on the internet honoring the spectrum where people keep showing stubs from the first game they went to, and it was only $6. You know, I became president of the 76ers back in 1980, and the seats on the first row were $9. And I had the temerity to raise them to 10, and the people went crazy.
That's a big jump, Lou. We would never do that.
Well,
40%
percentage wise, yes, I guess it was. But it's so funny how things have changed. But everybody loves the spectrum. And I have to ask you personally, have you been in the spectrum? Have you been here that long?
Absolutely. I was there, everything from a teenager and through college, and then even back as an adult. Like, you know, it's interesting. You talked about the different sporting events, and I mean, they had indoor soccer. You did it, Lou. You know it a lot better than I do. I just know it as a fan perspective, and I just remember the fond memories of going. I remember going to Villanova games there when they played the big games at the Spectrum. I remember going to concerts. I do remember going to the circus as well. It was just a different time, and it was very exciting to walk up those steps right across from the vet and, be a part of something bigger than yourself.
So you're a local then. Where did you grow up?
Well, I went to college here. So went to college here, have come and gone. I've lived here the majority of my life, but I lived in Fairmount. I've lived in Phoenixville. I live in Chatsford now. I've lived in Wilmington, Delaware. So I kind of have everything covered, I think.
You have surrounded the city. Well, it's so nice because I've talked to a lot of people and they've never been in the spectrum because they're too young. And a lot of them don't remember the vet. I go back to Connie Mack Stadium when it was called Shibe Park and when the Eagles played there. And that was a thrill. And then the vet was, I thought the vet was wonderful until people start breaking their knees and stuff on it. But and that was in the stands. So
I worked in the vet. I worked in the vet for years. And it was, there's a lot of stories to go back there of things. It was just a colossal sized building, right? So it was just massive. and a lot of concrete, right? But you know, it was ours and it was our home, and that's where it was unique to Philly. And I remember the, you know, old JFK. I mean, I remember when they were tearing it down. So when I remember they had the U2 concert there, that was a big deal. So
I remember Live Aid.
Yeah, the Live Aid. I think that was one of the last concerts. Yeah. So there's a lot of neat historic places. I wish I got to see Shive Park. I wish I got to see, you know, some of these great, the convention center. I never got a chance to go in there. And you know, the 76ers won a championship with home court being at the convention center.
All right. They played at the old arena. They played at the convention center and the convention hall. And they played occasional games at the
convention hall. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. Right. And the convention hall was a great place to watch a game. I saw many a Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell showdown. And awesome. there was not a bad seat in that auditorium. It was.
I would encourage anyone that loves the history of these arenas and stadiums to go to Hershey and try to get to in the old Hershey Arena, where Wilt scored 100 points. It still feels like you're in the early 1960s. It's pretty awesome.
So you said you've been with the Sixers for about 9 years. Is that correct?
9 years, but I've also worked with the Eagles in the 90s. I was with the Eagles. I've been in basketball since, yeah.
So how did you, a lot of people, a lot of our followers ask us, how do you get into sports? How did it start? Were you a big sports fan growing up?
Absolutely. You know, definitely the love of sports. And, you know, Lou, I think you lived this. It was such a different industry 30 years ago when I started, 29 and a half years ago. Wow. And it was, you did a lot more jobs. But it was a labor of love, and it was a real honor to be able, because these business operations were so small. So it's, I met some wonderful people along the way. I've learned a ton, and there was no track back then. And I think it's just a very tricky business now because it's worth so much. So to get into, and it's very different than it was. And that's, you know, fortunate for us that we got to see the evolution of these sports teams become global entities.
Well, I wrote in my book, I just published a book about the Spectrum in the early days, getting it open and all the trials and tribulations we went through with the running out of money and the owners having a blood feud. I wrote a chapter that in 1948 on Thanksgiving Day, after we finished dinner at we lived near the zoo at 30th and Girard. I took two trolley cars out to the arena to see the Warriors play the Washington Capitals. not spelled with an O, not an A, like the hockey team. And Joe Faulks and Ed Sadowski and Howie Dalmar. These guys were my heroes. Joe Faulks was the credited with inventing the jump shot. And to me, this was the most awesome sport I had ever seen. Now, you got to remember, there was no Flyers. The Eagles weren't a big factor. Baseball was king. But I became such a basketball fan, and I've seen them play in so many different arenas. And unfortunately, when I was with the Sixers, I was able to travel to L.A. and all the other cities on the road. And I maintain that it's the toughest game to play. You have no pads. It's a physical game. And Embiid is always on the floor, and that floor is hard. And I think it's the toughest sport there is.
Yeah, I would agree. The NFL, I think, is a little more. It's certainly more brutal with the collisions and the speed. But the NBA, I mean, they're just Iron Man. They're just they're playing the physicality of the game and the size and the stamina is just beyond belief. And I think that their athleticism, I bet you could. You go through some of the top players in the NBA, and you could see them playing another professional sport. That's how good athletes they are.
Yeah, they have the cardio because there's no downtime.
That's for sure. They run. Yeah.
At 94 foot, that's a long way to run, especially at top speed. And one of the things I love, and I love Embiid, is he'll block a shot and then run down, take the pass, and come back and defend. And it's just amazing the dexterity of these guys. And you said it really has evolved. I hate to be an old timer and talk about the old days, but when I was with the 76ers, or the Flyers, we had 9 people in the office. The Flyers had 8 or 9. The Sixers had 7 or 8, not counting the players. And now today, I said to somebody, it's like a telephone book. And they said, what's a telephone book?
So funny.
Things have changed, Chris. But what's coming up next? What's the next major promotion?
Yeah, listen, we're going to celebrate the Spectrum all year. We have we have 11 more games at home that we're going to turn back the clock, so to speak. You know, we embellished history a little bit just to make it a little bit shinier and more bold with the court and with the uniforms, but all with the proper respect, in my opinion, of the past. So we'll celebrate Sixers from that era. We'll celebrate different events, different music. It's really a lot of fun, and it's been a great education for not only myself, but certainly staff that are a lot younger than I am, and they didn't know about the Spectrum, and we get to tell the story and why we're so proud of it here in Philadelphia.
How many changes did the uniform go through before you wound up with the one you have?
Honestly, we do a new uniform every year, and this one we added a few things like the Spectrum S. We really were fixated on the primary logo that represented the 4 major teams that were in Philly, and at the time the Spectrum opened, from the Flyers and the Eagles, Phillies, and then of course us. That was the focal point, but we never want to go too far off the grid. And we always wanted to be about the 76ers. And so that's where we went with the font from the 1975 76 team. And that was, we put it on this Navy uniform that we had never done before. And the thought was just to show, make it highlight it, that it was very special. And dear to our hearts. And so that's kind of how we put this thing together. And, we all the way down to the crew neck collar, we wanted to do that because from the teams that were in the 60s and 70s, they always wore the crew neck. And so there was little nuances like that we had some fun with.
I have an intern who went to the game last week when you debuted the Spectrum stuff, and he said to me he wanted to buy some merchandise, and he said they're not selling it yet. So he called me today. He said, if you're talking to the Sixers, ask them when I can buy some of this stuff.
That's a great question. The 15th, Nike has the merchandising rights through the NBA, and that goes along not only the jerseys but sweatshirts and t-shirts and shooting shirts and all that stuff. And they will go on sale on November 15th. So we just have 4 days till that happens. And then you'll start seeing them at sporting goods as well as online. And hopefully they'll keep enough in stock. I have a feeling we're going to sell out very quickly.
Absolutely. I have to tell you that I have never bought a uniform. I've got hundreds of them given to me, or I work for the teams and I have them. I've given some. This is the first uniform I am considering buying because I love it so much.
I love that you threw in there considering, Lou. You know,
well, I have to talk to my wife, you know.
It's a great decision on talking to your wife. I'm going to save you some troubles. And, from the current team president to the past team president, as us both being stewards of the brand, we're going to send you a whole kit and just get you ready to go with the old Spectrum, because you're the one that ran the place, and we appreciate everything you did.
Well, that is very generous of you, and I appreciate that. And I will wear it on my next show with
Love
my
it.
High tops, my high tops. And I can't thank you enough for coming on. Sorry we didn't get to talk to Rob, but we'll have him on another time. But keep
Rob is a hard he's hard to book, but we're going to get him on next time.
All right. But keep it up, man. I love what you're doing, and the fans love it too. And go Sixers.
Thanks, Lou, and thanks, Susan. Appreciate the time. Take care.
Take care.
Take care. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Well, that was wonderful. I'm not sure, but I think Chris is Rob's boss. So we got the big man. We got the president of the basketball marketing, business, operations.
Yeah.
What a great guy. And he went to school here, he said. He's from out of town. And he embraced the Philadelphia history. And I love that so much because it's all we got. If we don't remember the past, the future doesn't mean a heck of a lot.
I think you need to send him a book, him and Rob a book.
That's a great idea. Once I get the uniform, as soon as I get the uniform, I'll hold it to that. All right. Well, we want to thank Chris Heck for being with us. And we're going to take a break now. We're going to be back with Ed Rubenstein, the financial guru of the early days of the Spectrum. And we'll be right back.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Manayunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednarik, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available soon on Amazon, eBay, and Barnes & Noble. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get it.
All righty, we're back. I'm Lou Scheinfeld, and with me today is Susan Baxter, the Museum of Sports Director of Community Relations. Our next guest is Ed Rubenstein, a classy guy, and our former third baseman on our Spectrum softball team, and a darn good player. He joined the Spectrum in 1973, I believe, in finance, and wound up running the place. Ed, I want to ask you, what was it like walking down the steps to the executive entrance that very first day on the job?
Well, I guess it was a dream come true. I was a big sports fan, always was, and grew up in Philly and loved entertainment as well, and never thought I would be in the seat of both the sports and entertainment show place in Philadelphia and, as you termed it, America's place, America's show place. So it was great. It was great.
How did that come about? Like, where were you from originally, and how'd you get into this business?
I grew up in Westchester, about 25 miles west of Philly. Went to Westchester High School, college in Lancaster at Franklin and Marshall, and majored in accounting because my parents said I could add. So I didn't know what else to do. So I majored in accounting and worked for a CPA firm for about 5 years out of school. And then one day, I mean, I just got tired of being in public accounting. So I was looking for a job, and I saw an ad in the paper for an assistant controller for the Spectrum. And I jumped at it and applied and got the job.
I'm amazed it was in the paper. I mean, usually in sports, you tell your cousin and all of a sudden it's all over the whole city and everybody wants that job. Of course, not everybody was qualified in your area, but everybody wants to work for a sports team or in the entertainment world. And what would be your advice to people who want to get into that business?
Well, today, back then, there were no college programs at all for sports administration or venue building administration or arena administration. Today, there are, I don't know, probably 100 or more colleges that have majors in that area. So, I mean, unless you know somebody, that's the best way to get in, to get the background, get a job, to get in, get your feet in the door someplace, and then grow in that business. But at least to come in with some background. Quite frankly, I'm not sure how much background you get in those courses, but I'm sure you get some. I never took one. I never taught one. But today, that would be the way to do it. Back then, it was answer an ad in the paper. That's why I couldn't believe that there was an ad in the paper. And the only reason, I believed it was it had the Spectrum logo, and I recognized it. And I said, well, this must be the real thing.
Imagine they actually paid to put an ad in the paper when 1,000 people would have shown up at their door if they put a sign outside. But I'm sorry, go ahead, Ed.
I was told that there were about 150 to 200 people that applied for the job.
Wow.
There were a lot of people that did want to be in that position.
I heard you got the job because you were the tallest.
Probably. Can't figure out any other reason why.
How long did you work at the Spectrum Ed?
I was there for about 14 years.
Oh, wow.
Grew from the assistant controller to VP of finance. I got into booking, was head of booking and administration for a while. And then what else was I? I don't know, I forget. I guess after that, once Lou left as president, there were, I think, two others that became president before I did. So either I just outlasted them or whatever. But I was the general manager president of the building for about 3 to 4 years.
And a lot of people don't realize that. They go to a game, they see the people selling beer and ushers and ticket takers. They don't know that there's a whole staff behind the scenes and finance. Very few people understand what entailed finance at the Spectrum. What actually did you do?
Well, before I answer that, the first thing that we always said was we wanted to make the building more than just a pile of bricks. People would see it as a building, as in most people, when they walk down the street, they'll see any building as a building. We tried to give it some humanity by making sure that the people that worked there were very humanized and treated people well and all that kind of stuff. But in finance, what I did, obviously we kept the books, made sure all the revenues that came in were recorded, made sure all the expenses were recorded. But in addition to that, we were required to be there on the night of every non-sporting event to settle the show, which means that for a specific show, let's say a concert, we had to account for all the ticket sales and all the expenses pertaining to specifically that show, security, ushers, stagehands, the tradespeople, steam fitters, electricians, all those types of people. And just make sure all the expenses were accounted for, that the rent was included, because we settle the show that night. That's when everything gets done. We don't wait for 3 or 4 or 5 days. We have to have everything there because the band is ready to leave that night to go on to their next gig. And they wanted to know how much they made that night. So we had to settle with the promoter, and the promoter settles with the band. Checks get exchanged, or wire transfer information gets exchanged. And we divvy up all the cash, all the money.
Well, I had the pleasure of hanging with Herb Spivak recently, and he's one of the originators of the Electric Factory, along with Alan Spivak and Barry Maggott. And he told me that one of the strangest things that happened at a settlement was when the Stones came there in the early 70s. And their manager said, I'll just give you some figures, whether they're accurate today or not, but the net was like $280,000 to the Stones that night. And the manager said to Herb Spivak and whoever was settling for the Spectrum, give us a check for $280,000 in cash for Mick. Mick wanted $80,000. Now, I computed that today to be about $500,000 in 2021. And he was saying, what is this guy doing with $80,000 in 1971 or what it might be, walking around? And
probably avoiding taxes. That's what he was doing with it, probably.
I'm naive. I didn't think of that, but it's crazy stuff at concerts, right? So your settlement.
I'll give you another one. We're settling with Yes, the band Yes, and their manager, who I will not name, but he was sitting there with us, and Yes was supposed to walk out with let's say $150,000, and they asked for $50,000 of it in cash. So we had $50,000 of cash there. And we write him a check for 100. We give him, he said, okay, I want you to make two envelopes, one for 25 and the other for 25 in cash. So I said, okay, we give him the first 25 in cash. He said, great, thank you. Puts it in his briefcase. The second 25, he opens up his shirt, puts the money inside his shirt. And he said, that's for me.
Oh wow.
They said, hey, I don't care where it goes, as long as you sign for it, that you got it.
Wow. And you happen to have $50,000 in cash laying around, huh?
Well, no, I mean, we would go out to the bank and get it on the day of the show. We are coming. We need 50 grand and hundreds or however we needed it broken down, and we would get it.
Well, Alan Flexer, who was the controller, vice president, eventually president of the Spectrum after I left, he told somebody, I forget if I read about it, that after Mike Tyson fought at the Spectrum, he was looking forward to sitting across the table from Don King, because Don King was irascible and could be fiery, and you never know what's going to happen. And Alan said he was disappointed that Don King turned out to be a nice guy, and that the settlement went smoothly, and he was kind of disappointed there was no big fight going on.
Well, you know, there were plenty of other opportunities, not with Don King, but there were plenty of other stories for settlements that half of them I can't even remember. There were just so many. I mean, every settlement had its own specific thing that happened during that period of time when we were settling. And it was my favorite. It was the favorite part of my job. I just really enjoyed it, because you had to really be thinking. So, you know, they start asking questions. Well, what is this on the settlement, or what is that on the settlement? You had to be well prepared to be able to give them answers, or at least give them answers that they couldn't call you a liar about.
Well, of all the settlements, I guess the concert settlements were the most colorful, you might say. And I got a call one night when I was president of the Spectrum. I was already home, and Frank Herbert, our director of operations, called, and he said, we have a problem. And I said, what's going on? He said, well, Lynyrd Skynyrd just finished their performance, and they're in the dressing room wrecking the room. They're poking out the ceiling tiles. They're shooting chocolate syrup into the electrical outlets. He said, they're trashing everything. What should I do? I said, lock the door. Put a padlock on it. Don't let them out until you can get somebody to assess the damage and deduct it from their settlement. Have you done the settlement yet? He said, we're in the midst. I said, hold off on it. I think it was something like $23,000 back in the 70s that they had done in this thing. And then there was another group had a monkey with them, and they left the monkey in the dressing room while they were on stage, and the monkey got up into the false ceiling and start chewing on wires, short-circuiting thing. And he was going above office to office, because the fake ceiling up there, the false ceiling, you could go from office to office above it where the wiring was. And security guys are running from office to office with a broom, brooms poking. They did more damage than the monkey did. So
it must crazy. Have been before I got there. I don't remember that one, but I don't doubt that it happened.
Well, crazy stuff. But you know, I wrote in my book that the Flyers, of course, and the 76ers being the major co-tenants were bedrock of the building's success. But Electric Factory never really got its due. And Larry Maggott has talked about this in public, that they, with their concerts, we only had four or five concerts the first 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then Electric Factory started doing things. Rock concerts weren't really invented when the Spectrum opened in big buildings. And Electric Factory created an industry, and FM radio came about at the same time, and things exploded in music. And they were putting on, two, three concerts a week, 40 and 50 a year. And that revenue was fantastic. I mean, that was like manna from heaven.
Yeah, it was and still is, quite frankly. And then it's just grown exponentially, the revenue to the buildings and to promoters. But there's just different ways of getting the revenue today than there were back then. But what would happen when we would be booking, when I was booking the building, the first available dates on the calendar each year went to the Flyers, because the Flyers basically managed the building. We basically worked for the Flyers, kind of for the Flyers, the same ownership. Second dates went to the 76ers. And the third dates, Larry Maggott would call up and he said, okay, what did the Flyers and 76ers not use? Mm-hmm. And he said, I want them all. You can't have them all, Larry. I mean, we have the circus, we have Disney on Ice, but so take those out. I want everything else. And to his credit, for the most part, he used most of those dates. He would, and the good part was too, that the Spectrum was in Philadelphia, which is on the East Coast, which means that we are close to a lot of other buildings. So that, or other markets, so that when an artist is routing his tour, if it makes the most sense to go from, say, Washington to Philadelphia to New York to Boston, if the Spectrum was not available on the date that should have been in Philadelphia, it wasn't such a big deal to go from Washington to New York to Boston and then back to Philly to come to get to the Spectrum on the date that we did have available. And Larry worked that all out, and that's why we ended up with so many dates, because we made them available to him. He was like our third sports team.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was able to work with the agents to route the tours so that they would definitely play the Spectrum. And they wanted to play the Spectrum. They wanted to play Philly. I'll tell you, Philly is one of the best, I will still say this, is one of the best concert markets in the country. And I'll give you an example. I was working in Phoenix at an amphitheater. I worked there for a short period of time. And we put a show on. Well, we used to do Van Halen. When we would do Van Halen, it was three or four shows. But they could sell that many tickets in Philly. So we were going to do Van Halen in this amphitheater in Phoenix a number of years later. And we were getting ready to put the show on sale. And I said to someone, I said, well, are we holding the next day in case they want to do a second show? And they looked at me and said, are you kidding me? We'll be lucky to sell out one. And that's when it hit me that Philly was that good of a market. That in Phoenix, Arizona, they weren't sure they were going to sell out one Van Halen show. Huh. We were doing four without a blink. Yeah.
Susan, did you go to the Spectrum as a teenager, or was that before your time?
My first concert there was senior year of high school, I believe, and it was Whitney Houston and Kenny G. And first experience with a concert, and I looked at my mom going, how many times is she going to change her clothes? Because I didn't know they did that.
I remember that show, and I remember being
it was very amazing.
Well, I remember being very upset about it because it was in the round, if I'm not.
Yes, it was very intimate. Yeah. You didn't like that?
Well, normally I would, except she never turned around.
Yes.
She played to one side of the building almost the entire time. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, are we going to get the phone calls tomorrow? People pissed off that she never looked at them.
But and Kenny G did. Kenny G utilized the whole space and he walked around. So I remember that. Now, though, was that your goal, though, to maximize the Spectrum? and have the dates booked as much as possible throughout a calendar year?
Oh yeah, I mean, if we did not have a date filled, it was basically lost revenue and we would never get back.
Well, I think the number might have been, when I was there, it cost $5,000 a day to operate the Spectrum, where they had an event. Of course, if you had an event, it was a lot more, but no event, you lost $5,000 and you can't get it back. Inventory is gone.
We adjusted our rent to account for that, so that on the days we did have events, we made sure, instead of charging $5,000, we would charge like 10 or 15 to cover for the dark days. By the way, I'm looking behind Susan and she has a Denver Broncos. I'm wondering if that's just to piss off Philadelphia people.
No, I'm very excited about Sunday. I can't wait. And all my Denver Bronco fellow fans are, John Elway is my heart. Ever since I was a young teenager, John Elway was my guy and I'm a hockey fan, but he got me. He loved the sport. I saw him 2 weeks ago. I went out to the game when they played we still call them the Redskins, the Washington football team. But I'm excited about Sunday. I hope we sweep the NFC East because we have one more team, and that would be the Eagles.
And she is such a Broncos fan that she flew out a couple of weeks ago to Denver to fill her bucket list of actually seeing the Broncos in Denver.
Finally.
There you go. Elway was a decent player. I'll give you that.
He had funny teeth, but we don't do body shaming on this show. Anyways, Ed Rubenstein, thank you so much for coming on. I love these old stories and the concert that Susan went, you could relate to. I love it. So I know you watch the games, Flyers and Sixers, when they are on the network, because you live in the Atlanta area. And you reached out to me the other day and mentioned you saw the Spectrum logo. And what was that all about? And we just had Chris Heck on, the president of the business operations and marketing. And he talked all about how they loved it, paying homage to the beloved Spectrum. So thanks again, Ed.
Well, they should.
Absolutely. Take care of yourself and we'll have you on again.
Be good. Yep.
Thanks, Ed.
Bye-bye.
All right, we'll be back in a few minutes with our king of collectibles, Nick DiPaci Jr. And he's going to tell you what that Ben Simmons jersey is worth nowadays. I can tell you right now. But then he might come back and all of a sudden, so don't burn it. Don't throw it out. We'll be back.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by DiPaci Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas DiPaci is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas DiPaci, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Manayunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednarik, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, the riots, the war. That is until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available soon on Amazon, eBay, and Barnes & Noble. Relish the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, and Kate Smith. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Coming this fall.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
All right, we're back on the Museum of Sports show on WWDB 860, and we're live on the Facebooks of WWDB and Museum of Sports, and we're brought to you by Depache Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They're the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Lou Scheinfeld along with Susan Baxter, and I want to remind everybody that WWDB, which is a daylight station, will sign off at 4:45 today, but you can continue to listen to our show until 5 o'clock on any device on WWDB.com or watch us on Facebook. So don't give up. There are ways of reaching us, and if not, we will reach you. Anyway, we're waiting for Nick Depache Jr. To join us, our collectible guru. His family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection. And I just mentioned before the break about the Simmons jersey, what it's worth. People have burned them, given them away for a dollar and stuff like that. But I would caution people. Things happen, have a way of happening in sports. And he might be back. He'll be back somewhere with something, but he might be back with the Sixers. And all will be forgiven. He'll take a few shots from the outside. Everybody will forget it. He'll go 1 for 5 at the foul line, like Giannis.
He'll make them with the other team.
Yeah, well, let's hope he gets straightened out. Right now, the guy's kind of messed up, and but don't throw that jersey out, Susan. Did you buy any Broncos stuff while you were out there?
Just like, you know, little souvenirs, but not really. I had ordered a new Elway jersey, and it just came in. It was on one of those sea boxes out in the west that you saw stranded in the water. So that just came in after 3 months. I had ordered it. And it was like 78 days that it finally came in. So I didn't get to wear it, but guess what? I'm wearing it Sunday with my Eagles friends.
You're going to the link wearing that jersey, huh?
Well, no, they're playing out Mile High. So it's an away game for the Eagles. And it's a 4:30 game. So, we're going to a bar.
Well, that's okay. Is there a Broncos bar in Philadelphia?
No. No, guys, not like the Kansas City Chiefs bar. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, you're going to start one.
Yeah, we do need to start one.
So do you root for the Broncos when they play the Eagles?
Yes, definitely.
Ooh. Oh,
the last game I went to was actually at the Link. It was the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl, and the Eagles beat us 52-24. It was horrible. And ooh. I was in the seats at one of the end zones, and I got – it's funny, though, because, you know, in Philly Flyers games anyway, you get really harassed if you're wearing somebody else's. Right. But once I kind of put my foot down and said, listen, y'all, we're AFC. We are no threat to you. I said, leave me alone. Like, stop with the good try, you know. And it was all in fun. Like, they were like, oh, yeah, okay. We're not going to spill beer on you. Like, I said, you better not come out. And I always say you're harmless. So that's. Going out to the game, I was shocked at how many Washington Redskins fans there were at Mile High Stadium. I mean,
really?
There were a ton. And I don't know if you watched the Broncos game last week. There was 18,000 Broncos fans at the AT&T Stadium for the Cowboys game. And you heard them because we kicked the Cowboys. We beat them bad. So it was really great. I kind of wish the game ended 30-0, but it didn't.
Right, me too.
Yes, it was quite a rush for somebody like me being a Broncos fan where, you know, is Teddy our quarterback? Is he not? And you just, yeah, I always say we're going through spurts, but hey, we won, you know, in 16, we won the Super Bowl with Peyton, and they did honor him the game I was at. So that was pretty neat. He got the ring, Hall of Fame ring, and he has a bus now on the front. I don't know if you saw my pictures, but Denver's a great town, very clean. Very quiet. Where the Avalanche play, I saw one thing hanging up. That's it. It's not draped. I assume Denver was a big sports town, and I think it's I don't know what it. Well, it's big in other ways, but it's not as Philly definitely has where it's in the blood. It's in people's blood. You see merch everywhere. Denver is not like that. It was very different experience. But, I mean, on game day, their tailgating was very mild. It was very eye-opening. The last time I experienced that was when they retired Rod Brindamore's jersey and or his number down at the RBC Center down in Raleigh. And it was very, tailgating was very laid back, quiet. People aren't drunk. Like, it's not, Philly definitely has a vibe. And it's awesome to be a sports fan in this area, because now that I've been to several areas, I've been to Pittsburgh, and it, there's definitely a vibe here that you, it's hard to let that go. It's really hard to let that go. Hi, Nick.
You know, in Philly, you have riots in the stands, and in other certain cities, if the police tell people move back, they say how far.
Yes. So it's all different.
Nicholas DePonte Jr. has joined us. He probably was out buying million-dollar jerseys, probably getting some Ben Simmons jerseys, stock up on them, because Ben, when he comes back, when he gets cleared up, and he's going to be back with the Sixers someday, I would imagine. I'm a kind of naive guy. And those jerseys.
Hey.
Dr. Yeah, DePonte.
Today's schedule, we're on schedule to get over to the new museum to open, hopefully in February, getting on schedule, opens and done and everything.
Great news.
Yeah, and today's schedule was a little bit crazy at the office, which is why I was joining you late.
We just got the defensive men, CB heard of them.
Yeah, so we just got a game used jersey from Miles Garrett, the defensive end for Cleveland. He's having a
stellar year.
A almost historic year. Obviously there's some controversy with him from when he kind of took Landry Jones's helmet and bashed him on the head with his own helmet, but it's still a good jersey. It's got nice game use.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of when Alomar spit at the umpire and everyone said he was through and he apologized and he made it into the Hall of Fame. Remember that?
Yeah,
for a little bit.
There's been some great incidents like that, and it's good that you got the jersey. Is it signed and it's game worn? I'm sure.
Oh yes, yeah. So it's a nice piece, and he could win Defensive Player of the Year this year. So we wanted to try to get that secure. There's a few jerseys that we've passed on so far because they're going for a little higher than we think it's worth, but if the price comes down on those few, then I'll let you know.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned, exactly.
Well, so let's talk about the museum for a second. The sound broke up on my end. And your dad told me a while ago he thought it would be open like shortly after the first of the year. Is that still on schedule? The first quarter, maybe?
Yes, that's still the case. We're underway. That we're in the preliminary process of getting the construction underway, and then it should be out. Everything should be up for display by January 1st.
Oh, wonderful! That's fantastic. I can't wait. And I've told a lot of people about it, and they're very excited about it. And I'm sure your mom's excited to get some of that stuff out of your house.
Oh, absolutely. And and the warehouse that we have some of the stuff stored in, yes.
And your dad's office.
Well, yeah, as you can see where I am, I've been relegated to the hallway for now because of, like I said, the schedule being so crazy today. But as you can see, I'm in the hallway and we're running out of wall space. I already gave you a tour, but it seems like these pictures are multiplying like rabbits. So.
Yeah, well, they are, but it's wonderful. I mean, if I came to you to have my heart checked, I would be in heaven looking at all these things. It's like being at the museum.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a lot of patients and their relatives. I'll see them just strolling the hallways. And it's like you said, it looks like they're in a museum touring. So it helps to kill the weight, which if you've been to Franklin Cardio, you know there is a weight. So,
I've seen that sign. I think at your old office said something like 3 hours or whatever.
That is still the case. As you can see, my dad just stepped in the hallway and he was here and gone like that because he was on his way to one of the exam rooms from another room. So not much free time here for us in between.
Somebody reached out to me at a company last week and said, do you think Dr. Tapachi would sell? And he mentioned two or three things. I said, no. I said, he doesn't sell. He buys. I said, he's a hoarder. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way, but he's a purist. He only buys one-of-a-kind things that are game-worn, autographed, or historic, and he doesn't like to sell them. He's only sold a couple of things since I've known him, a couple of major things, the Babe Ruth jersey and the Heisman Trophy from the Golden Boy. But he loves his, and you've said this, you don't get married to them or don't get too attached to, how did you phrase that?
Oh, about that it's a, like it's a living, breathing entity. And
right.
If you get too attached to something, then it's definitely harder to part with it. And you need to part with some memorabilia if you want to like change the collection and go in another direction and get different things, because it's a growing, living, breathing thing. That's what we look at the collection as.
Well, you've got some wonderful things there, and I can't wait till that museum opens in Washington Township, I think is the correct town. And it'll be called the Tapachi Sports Museum and Learning Center, or words along that effect, you know?
Exactly. The Tapachi Sports Library and Learning Center is the official name. I think the building will just say Tapachi Sports Museum.
That's perfect. And I talked to Eric Hafer, your architect, last week, and he was excited that the vault is back in, and the second level portion of it is back in. And I you're going to get that the statue that you folks have commissioned of Joe Frazier and Al Lee from their fight in 1971 mm-hmm. at the Garden, which has been drawing all kinds of crazy attention at the Johann Gym, where it's waiting to be moved over. And I guess the question is, are you going to put that, do you know yet whether you're going to put that statue outside or inside?
Most likely it will go inside, but we'll see how the spacing works. That's to be determined, but I'd say a 95% chance it's going to go inside.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Although I would love to see it lit up outside, maybe up high where nobody could get to it and to climb on it or to face it. But we only have about a minute left. So let me just ask you, what's hot in collectibles?
Well, these card breaks are all over right now. You know, you pick a team. So Lou might pick the Eagles. I might pick the Broncos. Since they're playing the Eagles, I'll just go with them. Oh, well, Susan will pick the Broncos. Let's give Susan the Broncos. And I'll take the Colts with my buddy.
Heck, I don't know if that's on your end or ours, but you broke up there.
Yeah, I think he's breaking up.
Yeah, I think we're losing. All right, well, that's our time, Nick. And we'll continue that. Hold that thought. Oh, okay, we'll continue it next week. We want to thank our guest, the 76ers, who was going to be Director of Basketball Communications, Rob King, but his boss came on, Chris Heck, the man behind all the great stuff going on with the Spectrum honoring on the court with the uniforms. We want to thank the former financial guru of the Spectrum, Ed Rubenstein, and our own king of collectibles, Nick Tapachi Jr. Museum of Sports Show is brought to you by Tapachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center, the specialist in non-invasive treatment. For Doug Scheimel and Susan Baxter, this is Lou Scheinfeld reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, these are the good old days.
These are the good old days.